Hey, this is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you're tuning into our super summer programming. I'm Hallelujah.
And I'm Stella. And together, we'll be highlighting the queer community, environmental issues, and upcoming local events.
Stay tuned for interviews, discussion, and music from our collections.
Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen territories of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples, the lands that they have cared for since time immemorial. Today, I am here with Glenn, the Director of Communications and Sustainability at the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation. So could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about you?
Sure. My name is Glenn Hughes. Like you said, I'm at the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation, which is based in Burnaby. I've worked there for coming up on 15 years now. Outside of work, I'm married. I live in Mission. We have four kids, three of whom are adults now. And our third child, our 22-year-old daughter, has Down syndrome and autism. And our 16-year-old son also has autism. So my family life and work life are very connected in that way.
Yeah, definitely. Can you explain what led you to your current role at the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation? I saw that you had quite a long history of, you know, doing nonprofits, then working as a manager at a restaurant. Like, I'm just curious about your journey.
Yeah, so I have worked almost my entire career in nonprofit, although I did take a three-year journey into the restaurant industry in between jobs. But I came to the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation in 2012. And at the time, I started in a joint role as Director of Communications and Director of Development, which is a fancy word for fundraising. And I did that for 7 years until we were able to sort of separate my two positions into two separate jobs. And we brought in Director of Fund Development, and I went full-time into Director of Communications. And then just coming up on about 3 years ago, I asked my boss basically for permission to add sustainability to my job, just because I have a huge passion for sustainability and interest in climate change. And I really wanted to sort of bring that into my job. So I've added that for the last few years as well.
Yeah. Was there anything that specifically spurred you into action to ask for that addition of sustainability, or was it more of just like a cumulative thing?
Well, I've been sort of on a self-education journey when it comes to climate change, basically since about 2018, sort of reading everything I could get my hands on and becoming increasingly concerned. And then it was really during the BC heat dome of 2021, going through it with my own family, that I sort of started to think about specifically about how climate change impacts people with disabilities in ways that a lot of us aren't thinking about. And so over time, as I thought about that, I just came to the conclusion that it's really important to start educating our Down syndrome community and the wider disability community about this issue. I think it's really important, especially for parents who are sort of thinking about our kids' future and planning for it, that this be something that informs the decisions we're making. So I wanted to basically, I asked if it would be okay if I sort of started raising awareness about this within our organization's community. And then in addition to that, we didn't really have anyone formally leading our organizational sustainability in terms of making efforts to improve our own operations. So so that's all part of what I do now.
Yeah, you know what? That's so cool. And that's part of the reason I wanted to interview you, is that it feels like you're filling in spaces that really need to be paid more attention to. And like, I was wondering, how are people with disabilities disproportionately affected by the climate crisis?
Yeah, so I kind of, when I talk about it, I kind of divide it up into three categories. first being health and safety, which is sort of like the direct impacts. I mean, it's very unique to each person and each type of disability. But for example, for people with Down syndrome, many of them have a harder time regulating their internal temperatures. Their bodies tend not to sweat as much. And they often have problems with their thyroid as well, which can also contribute to just the body not cooling itself down as well as many of our bodies do. For my daughter, she has very strong sensory preferences that impact things. Like, for example, she really hates when there's a fan on in the room. She doesn't like to drink water, that kind of thing. So, and she also doesn't like her window open, even like when she's sleeping. So when the house gets hot, it can be very difficult to keep her cool. So stuff like that. We see a lot of it with, well, the smoke that we're all experiencing this summer, with people who have issues with their breathing, that kind of thing. During disasters, it can be harder for people to evacuate if they have disabilities. So that's kind of the health and safety angle. And then I also think about sort of the wider socioeconomic impacts, things like when the healthcare system gets strained, those who rely on the healthcare system more, as many people with disabilities do, they'll feel that kind of impact more. And then also, I guess somewhat on the more positive side is our transition to a green economy, and just thinking through how changes we make in order to mitigate climate change, impact people with disabilities, opportunities for win-win situations that both benefit the climate and people with disabilities, like improving transit and that kind of thing. So those are sort of the categories that I like to think about.
Yeah, I've done a bunch of interviews about sustainability and the environment, and I've noticed this theme with a lot of people that I talk to is that a lot of the most underserved groups are often also the most that are impacted by systemic issues like the climate crisis. I was hoping you could maybe explain how this might extend to people with disabilities, like how they might be underserved in some areas or not considered for a lot of things.
Sure. So, yeah, in general, I think people with disabilities are very underrepresented in climate planning and climate discussions. Even things like I've read about research done around extreme heat and like policies about like when, at what temperature do you need to do like heat alerts and stuff like that. And those studies and decisions all seem to be made with respect to sort of the typical person's body. Whereas people with certain disabilities that are more sensitive to heat might need to take precautions at lower levels, but that's not really considered. We just kind of gear everything towards sort of what is typical for most people. And when I started to sort of get active in climate spaces, I found that I was usually sort of the only person in the room who was talking about disability issues. I mean, people certainly can have invisible disabilities that I don't know about, but I didn't see people with disabilities sort of at the table. And when I raised those perspectives, the feedback I got, I mean, super positive, but I did seem to be the only one sort of coming from that perspective. And it can be really tricky. Like in my role specifically, I'm trying to create opportunities for people with Down syndrome and intellectual disabilities to have a voice. But sometimes they don't fully understand the issues themselves, and I don't want to speak on their behalf. So I'm trying my best, learning as I go, sort of the best ways to create opportunities for those conversations.
Yeah, I think, like, the fact that you mentioned that a lot of times you're the only person in the room shows that there is such, like, a gap in these kind of conversations that we're having about, you know, the climate crisis and what kind of groups are actually represented. So it's really important to have an advocate. And I know you've slightly touched on this, but I was wondering, how do you personally manage this type of leadership and uplifting voices of people who are underrepresented without traversing into, like, paternalism or more so, like, speaking for them in a way? I think that must be a difficult balance.
It is tricky. And, you know, as a parent of people with disabilities, that I do have, like, sort of the highest level of understanding I can have without having the disability myself. So I do feel like there's something to contribute there. But when I sort of officially added this to my work at the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation, I felt it was important to have at least one person that was sort of with me on the journey that could speak from lived experience. So I asked our staff if we had any adults with Down syndrome in our circle that had a particular interest in environmental issues or climate change. And they pointed me to a young woman named Nika Zondag, who's a 22-year-old woman with Down syndrome and super passionate about these issues and super knowledgeable, too. And shortly after I made my sort of tweak of my job, I brought her on as our official sustainability ambassador, which is a paid position. And earlier this year, we were given a grant from an organization called Eviance, which allowed us to actually expand Nika's role. So she's sort of my partner in crime for everything that I've been doing. And she is really the face of it, but not just the face. She is contributing a great deal herself. So we've co-hosted two webinars in the past two Earth Days. The first one was on Down syndrome in the era of climate change, and the second one was climate resilience for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So she co-hosted those with me and contributed her own insights into those discussions. And then actually in September, we're going to be presenting together in person for the first time at Vancouver Climate Day on disability in the era of climate change. Yeah, we've had lots of cool opportunities to sort of get Nika out in front of people to share her wisdom. We have a magazine that we publish four times a year called 321 Canada's Down Syndrome Magazine. And our current summer issue on stands now is featuring, Nika's actually on the cover, and it features a full-length interview with her about her interest and concerns about climate change. Yeah, she's really wise. She understands the issue very well. I never tell her what to say. I just prompt her with questions, and she has very thoughtful answers and important wisdom to share. Yeah, so that's kind of the approach that I'm taking right now, working specifically with Nika, and hopefully over time we can expand it to include more voices, but she's doing an awesome job. Her work was actually recognized by the City of Burnaby in June. We were awarded an environmental star by the city for all the awesome stuff that she's been doing.
That's awesome. I was just going to mention that actually that's how I found out about the work that y'all have been doing, is through the Vancouver Climate Day talk that's upcoming. It's on September 18th, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted also to mention that for our listeners if they're interested in going to that, because in person would be quite nice.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that just, I guess I should have asked this question earlier, but what does the Down Syndrome Foundation do in and around the community, and also, you know, from a sustainability perspective?
Sure. So DSRF has been around for over 30 years now, and we're BC's leading service provider for people with Down syndrome. So we offer programs and services for both people with Down syndrome and for their families that cover the full lifespan. We have kids that start coming to us when they're like 3 years old, and after 30 years, some of them that started with us as little kids are now adults. So we have programs going well into adulthood. So we do sort of foundational skill building things like speech therapy, occupational therapy, behavior support, mental wellness, and then also reading and math instruction. And then as they start to age a bit into the teen years and adult years, we have recreational programs like improv and taekwondo. And then as they move into adulthood, we have both educational and practical skill building classes. So a lot of students, after they graduate high school, will come to us for a few years for reading and communication classes, money, math, and budgeting, courses that sort of help them prepare to move into the workforce and live more independently in the future. One of my favorite programs is called Speaking Out, which is about finding our voice with respect to sort of the important issues of the day. I'm not one of our program leaders, but I did help establish that class. We started it as a 1 week summer program about 5 years ago. And when we did it, it was specifically focused on learning about climate change and also advocacy and advocating about climate change. And it's now grown into a year-round program from September to June, in which students explore all kinds of important world issues and community issues and learn how to have their voices heard. So that's really cool. And then Nika and I kind of started a new program just this past year called the Community Club, which is sort of a community volunteering program. So we go out with a group of adults with Down syndrome. I think we have 9 people registered for this coming fall. And we go out and partner with other local organizations that are doing good work. So for example, in the fall, we're going to do an outing with For Our Kids Burnaby and do some invasive species pulling. Some of the things we did this past spring, we did a Earth Day park cleanup. We volunteered at Ryan's Rainbow Emergency Food Outreach, helping to organize food for people to pick up. And in June, we put together some cooling kits, which were very specifically designed for people with Down syndrome. And we distributed those to families who come to our center. And that was really awesome because we consistently got feedback from families that they had no idea that people with Down syndrome are at higher risk of like heat illness. So it was a really great way to raise awareness and also put something practical in people's hands that they could use for weeks like this past week when it got very hot.
Yeah, it's great you guys are doing so much community work as well. I was wondering if there was also an aspect of trying to influence any kind of like policy change or research as well.
Yeah, so, well, I'm kind of involved in some other organizations sort of as a volunteer, but I do it sort of on behalf of the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation. They've kind of given me the go-ahead, and so our name is behind it.
It's the BC Climate Emergency?
Yeah, so the BC Climate Emergency Campaign is one of them. And then the other one, which is brand new just in the last couple months, is the BC Heat Collaborative, which is specifically raising awareness and advocating for policies around extreme heat. So as part of that, I'm leading a disability resilience working group to kind of identify sort of the gaps in how people with disabilities are currently protected from extreme heat and to make recommendations on that. So we literally just had our first meeting 2 days ago. But yeah, that's some sort of side work that I'm doing, but it is sort of with the backing of the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation as well.
Nice. Do you have any insight as to how policymakers or as well as everyday people can do better to incorporate the wisdom and experiences that underrepresented voices bring to the table? Like, I know that one of the goals of the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation is to, you know, find intersectional solutions to, you mm-hmm. know, like the climate crisis and things like that. So I was just wondering if you had any insight.
Yeah, I think making room for people with disabilities and disability organizations in these conversations, which needs to be very intentional. Like, I think there could be more of an effort made to actually reach out and invite people with disabilities and the organizations that represent them to join the conversation, as opposed to just kind of waiting for them to take the initiative and find the conversation. Because, like, for me, I spent a good 2 years sort of where I wanted to be in these conversations, and I didn't even know where they were happening.
Yeah.
It took me a lot of effort to find places where I could insert myself. So I think maybe a more proactive effort to reach out to disability communities and invite them in would be good. And then there also has to be a lot of thought put into how to create inclusive spaces where people can contribute, even things like closed captioning meetings and having interpreters available and different ways for people to participate in conversations. Like for me with Nika, like she has a very high level of understanding and she has very strong skills in written communication. But she can be very difficult for people to understand when she's speaking. So the way that I work with her when we're presenting things is I prompt her with questions and I have her write out her answers in advance. And then I put all her text on the screen as she's speaking, so that if people are having a hard time understanding her, they can just read along, which is super helpful. But I'm still trying to figure out like how to empower her in a setting where she doesn't have the opportunity to pre-prepare, sort of preload things onto the screen and stuff. So that's something I'm still working on. But like if she had the opportunity to be in a meeting, it would be great if sort of like the agenda was made available ahead of time so that she could write down her talking points and we could share them as we go. But often that's not how these meetings work. They're just kind of free flow discussions, and it would be really hard for her to contribute in that type of scenario. So I think if we're going to be really serious about including people with disabilities, we need to be willing to put the work in to create structures that allow them to actually contribute.
Yeah, it is so important to have intersectional spaces, especially when we're talking about topics that disproportionately impact different groups of people. And I guess I was also thinking about, like, in terms of intersectional solutions to, you know, the climate crisis. I know solutions is kind of like a big word. I don't know if we're there yet. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what kind of ideas or conversations have been happening around the solutions side.
Yeah, well, that's what we're hoping to work towards with this BC Heat Collaborative, and in mm-hmm. particular our disability resilience group. My favorite solution that I like to advocate for is free heat pumps for people with disabilities, because that is a good example of something that really benefits a person with a disability. It gives them the ability to cool themselves when it gets hot. It's something that they might not be able to afford to do on their own, because people with disabilities often, unfortunately, have less income and less disposable income in particular. And it's also a big win for the climate because heat pumps are electric and they don't pollute the way gas furnaces do. So that's sort of my favorite example of an intersectional solution. But another one is, I mentioned transit. Disability community tends to rely on transit at a higher level than the general population. And we also know that transit is an important solution to get some vehicles off the road. So anything we can do to strengthen and green the transit solution or system is a good intersectional solution. Another one is in the area of green jobs. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the movement for the Youth Climate Corps. So that's a policy that's been strongly advocated for both at the provincial and federal level. And the idea is to basically provide opportunities for people under the age of 35 to work for 2 years in areas that address the climate emergency, whether it's in terms of mitigation or adaptation. And I once was on a sort of an organizing call, and there were MPs from every party except one, which I will not name. I'll let you figure out who probably wasn't there. But there were MPs from most of the parties that are joining in the advocacy for this. And I had a chance to speak to them specifically about whether the jobs created under a program like that would be, whether there would be opportunities for people with Down syndrome. Like, are there opportunities for them to put their skills to work towards this cause? And they assured me that the idea was to make it fully inclusive and accessible and to provide opportunities for everyone to work towards the solutions that we need to see happening. So those are some of the solutions that I like to advocate for that, yeah, are just beneficial to people with disabilities, but also part of what we need to be doing to address the climate crisis.
Thank you so much for sharing those.
Yeah, no problem.
I think it is time to start getting wrapped up. So I just had one final question for you.
Sure.
And it's, how can our listeners support the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation or get involved?
Oh, well, I love that question. Thank you.
Yeah.
If you visit our website, dsrf.org, there's a nice big donate button. And we really do need people's support. Get too far into it, but we're kind of in a transitional period right now where the entire funding landscape for people with Down syndrome is changing. And there's some really positive changes coming our way in 2027, 2028. But right now, we really need people's support to sort of help us get to that point. So, yeah, we would really appreciate it. We also always need volunteers. We've got lots of events and programs that depend heavily on volunteers, and there's information on our website about that as well.
That concludes my interview with Glenn. Next up is a conversation Hallelujah and I had with Kai from Dogwood, BC.
We are back at CJSF 90.1 FM. Today it's me, Hallelujah, and we have Stella.
Hey.
And our guest right now is Kai from Dogwood. Would you mind just quickly introducing yourself?
Hey, good morning. I'm Kai. I work as an energy campaigner for a group called Dogwood. We're BC-wide, so I'm up north on Gixan territory by the Skeena River. But we've got organizers in Vancouver and Victoria and Surrey and around the Lower Mainland.
Yeah. Would you like to give me just like a little brief on your journey with climate and energy action in the last, I guess, over a decade now in Dogwood?
Yeah, I'm old as hell, so I will cop to that. I've been around for more than 10 years working on energy issues in BC, and we come at it from the lens of what we call our three D's, decarbonize, decolonize, and democratize. That's really our mission at Dogwood, and the issues we work on weave together these three different strands. And so we look at issues where indigenous rights are under attack, where billionaires are fighting to expand fossil fuel infrastructure and pollute our democracy. And so right now that's really got us focusing heavily